Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Well, episode 88, that's kind of crazy. Can we play Rocket 88 from the old time, maybe the first legitimate rock and roll song ever? Rocket 88, Sun Records, if we could find it, it's badass. I got it, but you know. I'm Dan Nalen, and you have tuned in to another scintillating version of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this very special episode, we have the Bring the Gig guys coming in to tell us about their new way to book shows here in Salt Lake City. We have Mike Riedel, our very own beer expert, talking about the latest beer news from around Salt Lake City, and the Salt Lake Pirate Punks are coming inside to tell us a little bit about booking some shows themselves right here in Salt Lake City. We are here with a couple of folks from Bring the Gig, a new means that I'm going to butcher describing how it works, but to me it seems almost like a Kickstarter, but for bringing live music to town or something along those lines. But we'll get a better explanation from that. We have Mike Harker, founder of Bring the Gig. Rory Donahoe, how do I describe your role?
I think I'm support.
Support? Yeah. Brains?
That's a good way to say it.
Okay. Well, why don't we start? Mike, as the founder, why don't you give us the gist, because I probably just butchered the hell out of it, of what is Bring the Gig in a nutshell?
Yeah, you actually didn't butcher it too bad. It's a lot like Kickstarter. It's basically crowdfunding for concerts. Think of it like you want a band to come to Salt Lake City, and they're not coming. They haven't come in a long time. And it's a way to try and get the band here, basically allowing the fans to fund bringing them.
Okay, and now many of us have had that experience, no doubt, living in Salt Lake over the years.
Yes.
Tell us sort of, where did you kind of get the impetus for the idea? I mean, was it just that very frustration? And then how do you take that frustration and say, I can actually do something about it without being a full-on concert promoter?
Yeah, obviously, like with all the social sites, like Kickstarter and stuff like that, the idea was out there in different forms. It actually has been done in Brazil. My partner, Rick Diaz, he's from Brazil, and so we knew that they've done something like this very successfully in Brazil. Okay. That's basically where the idea came from. So we had talked about just the frustration over not being able to get a lot of bands here.
Right.
And as we talked through it, we realized this is something we can do something about, because my other agency that I own actually does a lot of digital stuff and digital marketing, and so we knew that we could do the tech side of it, and we'd figure out the concert side.
Right. And so how does it work if I'm, you know, I'm a guy who wants whoever, so-and-so to come here?
Yeah.
I approach you guys at Bring the Gig?
Yeah.
Or what? How does it get the ball rolling?
Yeah, the easiest way is actually through Facebook.
Okay.
So through Facebook, that's usually how we're kind of putting our feelers out there for bands and what people want to hear. We're also creating some means on the site for people to be able to do that as well. But once we actually decide on a band, there's, as you probably know, there's a ton of work behind the scenes to actually figure out if we can make it happen in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And, you know, and I've got experiences like trying to reach out to Jack White and people like that where it's failed miserably. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And once we can get past that huge hurdle, then that's when we're able to put it up for the fans to fund. And
okay. Yeah, is that one of the big challenges? Do you guys act as sort of the promoters based on what the average people out there are asking you to pursue? Or do I have to go find 100 people and say, we really want Jack White? Will you guys make contact with his people?
Yeah, so we'll act as the promoter.
Okay.
And in fact, we've got two partners. Two of our partners are the guys from the Stateroom, which is also why our first few shows are at the Stateroom.
Okay.
They handle all the promotion side. Once we've got a band, we can do all the legwork and call the artists and the agents and try and figure everything out. Once we've got that down, then it's really up to the fans it's in their hands. We're not doing the standard promotion stuff.
Right.
We're saying, fans, you've got to basically spread the word through Facebook.
Yeah,
and
you guys are the promo
you guys
team.
Are,
we're the nuts and bolts guys.
Yeah, that really is the case.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really important to explain the process of how it works.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Not only do people go on Facebook where they can put what the kind of bands they're looking for, what they haven't seen in Salt Lake City in a long time. We go out and we contact the bands, and if we find one that's interested in the platform that we've built, we say, okay, how much does it cost to bring you to Salt Lake City? And we find a cost, and then we go out and we say, you can buy what would you call it, like a premium ticket?
A bring ticket.
So you get a bring ticket, and which basically it's more expensive version of a ticket. So it's like $100 for a ticket.
You're kind of an investor in the project.
It kind of depends. We've actually experimented with a few different ways to do it. So we've even done, like for our first few shows, we've actually done bring tickets as just the same price as the standard ticket.
Gotcha.
Just as a way that we're trying to prove the model. And
we're building the word of mouth.
We're building the word of mouth and trying to get all that out there. But Rory's on the right path. Mm-hmm. That if you buy a bring ticket, then you're one of the people that's eligible, that if we sell enough tickets, we kind of have a set level that we have to reach for every show, where if we sell enough standard tickets, once the show's been funded, then the people who bought the bring tickets go for free or for a minimum fee.
Okay. So you're basically like covering three or four people just because you want to get this artist to town, maybe with one of those premium tickets.
If you want to meet that minimum threshold.
Yeah,
correct.
So you'd go on Facebook and you'd say, I need my friends to buy tickets once it's on general admissions, and say, I need five or six friends. If I can sell out, I get all my money back and a free ticket. Okay. So a lot of it is self-promotion, grassroots kind of stuff.
Right. Which is what music fans are doing on their own. This is just a way to get the damn show. Right?
Exactly. And a way to kind of thank the fans. I mean, you know, one of our concepts behind this, and something that's really important for us, is to keep this really pure and have it be something that we're rewarding the fans. And we believe that the fans are the ones that should be the closest to the artist, are the ones that want the artist to come. The artists want to have that connection with the fans. We're trying to create that connection.
Obviously, I guess it just depends on the venue that you're working with to get that, what the minimum threshold would be, I guess.
It makes a big difference.
Sure. Is it like, you know, a half full room, say, in general? Is there a number you can put on it? Because obviously in Salt Lake, there's bands that maybe don't have a following yet, and they come through, and it'll be, you know, without, through this process, you might see a band that's like, oh, they got 20 people this time, but other bands have a huge social media thing and maybe sell out unexpectedly without this.
Correct. And a lot of it's negotiation with the band, because this is a new concept, just trying to get bands to be like, okay, we'll do this, and it's not really the bands that are the challenge, it's the agents.
Yeah, sure.
And trying to get past those agents and getting them to agree to do something that's experimental in a way and different is a challenge. But once we get past that, then you know, for example, we did Jonathan Colton. I don't know, you know who
I actually was at that show, not knowing what was going on with you guys.
Yeah.
I just was at the show as a fan.
Yeah, well, so he's awesome, you know, and a lot of people are huge fans. And for him, I think we had a threshold that we had to reach 150 tickets, and then we did, I think, 40 bring tickets and then 150 standard tickets. And if we reached the 150, then all the fans that bought the bring tickets went for free. And we did reach the threshold, and all those fans went for free on that show.
And now, was he a guy who wouldn't have come here without this, or was it a matter of you found him at the right time and this kind of helped encourage him?
A lot of it was timing. You know, he was trying to figure out whether he was going to come. Guys from the stateroom had a lot of conversations with him. It still took a couple-hour conversation to convince them, of the whole thing. He's also an awesome guy. He's really interested in experimenting online and trying new things. And
so he comes from that world, right?
He does. So he was really willing to try some things, and I think that's part of why it works so well with him also.
What are some of the reactions you get just in general from agents, like you're mentioning? That's really who you're dealing with. When you originally kind of go to them for the first time that maybe you haven't dealt with them, like, do they think you're trying to pull some scam, or that you're some part of the business that isn't necessary to them? It's the music business.
Yes,
right?
quite literally, yes. You know, like,
you're going to ruin my client. He'll never do this.
You're going to abscond with the money, and he'll have nowhere to play when he gets to town, kind of thing.
It really is a little bit like that. And so it's like trying to establish that credibility and just get in the door and actually have them understand the model and be willing to try something different, because they're worried that it's going to tarnish the artist's reputation if they don't get funded. They're worried about all kinds of things. They're worried that somehow we're going to cut the agent out. You know, there's a lot of challenges.
I'm sure they're worried about that first.
I'm sure that's number one concern on their minds.
But it does make sense for, say, an artist like Jonathan Colton that maybe hasn't been to Salt Lake before, and they're trying to maybe establish a foothold. You know, it is a risky proposition for them to go into business with people they don't know or something, which it helps to have people like the stateroom, I guess, involved in that score.
Correct, and that's actually why we partnered with the stateroom. Like, I had made a bunch of these calls, like I had talked to these agents, and I had the conversations that were like, "You're crazy," so we
our
got
guys
people
end up playing in your living room.
Exactly, we got people that could basically say we already have the relationships with these agents, and it's just a matter of being able to structure the conversation in a slightly different way.
Okay, and how is it different? I don't know if it's getting too inside baseball, but how is it different if I'm the artist to go through the bring the gig process versus just, you know, a promoter at the stateroom wants to book me, or I call him and I want to be in Salt Lake on a given date?
It's only different in the sense that, you know, our intention is to basically do it where we're funding the show and that we're actually showing that there's the demand versus them just shooting from the hip, which happens a lot in the industry.
Like, I don't have a crowd in Salt Lake, so I'm not going to go there.
They might not, and they might pull at the last second, or, you know, I think one of the things, it really puts the pressure on the fans to promote, and it shows the fans that the pressure's on them to promote. Right. Instead of a promoter just going out and spending money on billboards or advertising or doing things like that. So it takes some of the marketing budget that would normally be there for billboards and things like that, and it basically is taking some of that money and saying, okay, we're going to actually give that money back to the fans and repay them for their promotion.
Their
legwork
and working their social media outlets and whatnot.
Like, yeah, and ultimately, like on the Jonathan Colton show, you know, they gave us their expectations, and we greatly exceeded their expectations for what would happen. Part of that is because I'm sure that there were some hidden fans, and part of it is because some people actually reached out and promoted the show and did a lot on Facebook and Twitter and social media.
And now you have a relationship with his agent that goes beyond Jonathan to, if he has a lot of other artists that you might be able to work with, and the skepticism is now
gone. It's the small domino, it's the bigger dominoes, I guess. But that's so we're kind of starting smaller, and we're hoping to scale up.
Yeah, and we did a cool interview with Jonathan and posted that on Facebook and things like that, so that you can actually see some of his reaction to the model. And, you know, it's trying to get one of those each time we do this to try and build that credibility and momentum.
Okay. What do you have anything? I mean, are there any shows booked and locked and loaded right now, or are there things kind of cooking?
We've got one that it's actually not quite to where it should be. The funding closes basically tomorrow at midnight, and only 10 of 40 tickets have sold. And that's for Free Energy. Okay. And then the Double Well.
Yeah, Double Well's going to be opening for him. And that's a local Salt Lake band, so that's pretty cool.
It's actually going to be like co-headliner. But the Double Well is a local Salt Lake band. And Free Energy, you know, they're coming from somewhere else. I actually don't know where, but kind of a cool band.
So they're trying to rally right now.
We're trying to rally. Right now. I'm reaching out to everybody, trying to do whatever I can to get people to spread the word.
Is there a cutoff point in advance of a show? I mean, obviously, I guess you guys have to set a deadline so you can tell the band, come to town or not.
Correct.
How far out is it usually? Or is there a usually, I guess?
Yeah. So far, there's not a usually because it so depends. Like the very first show, we did a test show actually like back at Sundance a year ago, and for that one, we basically had 48 hours for the entire funding of that show, and we're able to pull off what we needed.
Who was that?
It was First Big Flight.
First Big Flight.
It was a super band of bands from the 90s. It had Vertical Horizon and Counting Crows.
Yeah, Matt Scanlon from Vertical Horizon, people from Train and Counting Crows and
Supergroup.
Luce.
Supergroup.
I remember being very confused because everyone was a little bit older than me and was wealthy and in Park City. And I just kind of found out they had an open bar, so I went.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to find a lot of music if you can find an open bar next to it. That's how you get me to listen to Train. Okay, well, I really appreciate you guys coming in. And again, people can go, is it just Bring the Gig on Facebook? Search for it and you guys will pop up.
Or bringthegig.com and we'll show the shows that we've got going on. We've got a few more that we're working on. We're trying to build up that momentum where we can start rallying shows a couple times a month.
Awesome. Yeah. And you're on Twitter too, Bring the Gig Utah.
And just Bring the Gig, both.
All those
memes. Yeah, if anyone wants to share music, videos, ideas for bands they want to see, that's the kind of stuff we're really hoping for.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming in. Rory
for
and Mike,
us.
Bring the Gig. Everybody, check them out. Bringthegig.com.
Great. Cool. Thanks
you so much.
Kathy Foy is one of those musicians you have probably seen play once or twice through the year. She's best known maybe for being the drummer in many of Will Sartain's projects, such as Future of the Ghost and Hang Time. Last year, she started recording her own solo album, working with a whole lot of local notables, and she's finally got that record ready to go. It is called Quiet as the Hour, and we're going to play a song called Wars Are Lost. This is from Kathy Foy's solo debut.
The lost part of our kin.
releasing her debut album at the Urban Lounge on March 16th, along with Hang Time and King Nico, who are also releasing a new album at the same show. For more information, look up Kathy Foy on Facebook. We are here with resident beer expert Mike Riedel, who you can read every month in Slug Magazine as he writes about our local brews news. And welcome, first of all, Mike. Thanks for coming in again.
Thanks for bringing me back. Appreciate
Very
it.
Excited always to hear about what's new in our lovely beer landscape here. And why don't we just delve right in with Bohemian Brewery has a Dunkelweizen of note.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with Dunkels, Dunkels are a darker wheat beer, a little bit more banana. A bread character than say a regular wheat beer, regular Hefeweizen. This one in particular is a brand new creation of. They got a new brewer in.
Oh,
I knew I'd forget his name. And
for future reference,
yeah,
we'll get
I know. And Bohemian does old school beers.
Yeah,
they only do lagers. As far as I know, they've never done an ale. This is part of that tradition of old world beers made well.
Yeah, it seriously sounds like a. I mean, is it a seasonal thing at Dunkelweizen? Is it something that people normally do in winter time or no?
No, it's drank year round.
Year round by the lovers of the Dunkel.
anytime you can get a new beer style in the mix.
Yeah,
especially at Bohemian because
they don't really mix in a lot of new stuff very often, do they?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Joe Petrus, their owner, passed away late last year.
Oh.
He was the old school,
right?
Behind old school beer, and he was not really keen on.
We're just gonna make our kick-ass.
We have four beers, and we're gonna make those well.
Yeah,
and that's it.
And they did, and do,
and they do, and but there's a new philosophy there now, and they're making much more seasonals, and this is one of them.
Interesting. Well, that's a good reason to stop by Bohemia, as if you needed one beyond the. The regular beers,
really,
they have.
And it's one of the most beautiful breweries you'll ever come
across.
Awesome
space. Okay, and this one that I'm not going to try to even say because I will butcher the hell out of it, but
Paardebloem is Belgian for dandelion.
Oh, really?
This beer is made by Red Rock in collaboration with a new Belgian brewery out of Fort Collins, Colorado. This beer was designed and made. About 4 or 5 years ago when there was a big hop shortage. And it was hard to get proper hops for the beers. And so people were looking to alternatives for bittering.
Yeah.
And
here comes hundreds, the dandelion.
Hundreds and hundreds of years ago, I mean, you didn't have access to hops. You used whatever you could, and dandelion greens are pretty bitter.
Huh.
So they made this beer, and it is done very well in local and national competitions. And last year, it won gold medal in the experimental beer category at the Great American Beer Festival.
Oh, wow.
Which is a huge shot in the arm, and that's a crazy category because you can throw anything into that category.
That's where everyone gets to play and do something squirrely.
And to get the gold in that was a huge shot in the arm.
Right?
This collaboration with New Belgium has been going on for a while, and it had come to the attention of the owners of New Belgium that we should take this national. And they have the distribution and they have the capacity to make a beer on a large scale. And so this beer is going national and probably worldwide.
Oh, so we're going to be able to like go down to our friendly local liquor stores and buy a bottle of, it's a Red Rock.
Paardebloem. And the new Belgian version, which will be a little different,
okay,
should also be available to have at Red Rock only. It'll be the only time you'll be able to buy a new Belgian beer in Utah, but you won't be able to take it out of a Red Rock restaurant. You have to drink it there.
Okay.
So you can compare the two and see which one you like.
Nice. Oh, I like it. I like it. Any excuse to try two different things, that's always good for me. We also have Epic here with something new on the horizon. Or maybe it's already off and rolling.
It has been out for about a week and a half, and it is Brainless on Raspberries. And if you're not familiar with Epic's Brainless line, Belgian is started as a Belgian strong ale.
Yeah.
The brewers started adding fruit.
Yeah, they've done the Brainless peaches, right?
They've done peach, they've done cherry.
Okay.
Raspberry.
They're making the rounds.
And this one is quite nice. This one is not.
Were you surprised? You sound surprised. Are you not?
This one's not
wheat meats. Raspberry lover, perhaps?
Well, raspberries don't age well in beers.
Okay.
And the other two were aged in peaches, and cherries were aged in Chardonnay barrels.
Oh, okay.
Which gave it a little more of a vineyard quality.
Yeah.
The raspberry wasn't. And so I was like, maybe it won't be as good. But it does have kind of a lot of the vineyard characteristics of those other beers. And it may be in part
to the raspberry. Is it super strong? I mean, I've had beers with raspberry that I liked, and I've also had some that were just so overwhelmingly raspberry. It was just like, no.
You'll get the raspberry, and it depends on who you ask.
Sure.
I think it's fairly dry. I don't think it's really sweet, but you get that raspberry essence.
Okay.
And some people I've talked to think it's way too sweet.
For them, right. So yeah, sometimes the sweet is just, it defies drinking more than one or something. But
I like it a lot.
But maybe not. All right. And then this last one sounds like one that is definitely right up my alley. The Uinta Birthday Suit Sour Brown.
Yes. Last year was Uinta's 19th birthday, and to celebrate that birthday, they created Birthday Suit Cherry Ale, Sour Cherry.
Mm.
And that one was made with sour cherries. I think sour pie cherries. It was a pretty big hit. It wasn't a huge hit because sour beers are,
Sure, it's a taste thing.
And it was their first attempt at a sour beer. And this year, they've tried it again, this time with a brown ale as the base.
Yeah,
and
that's just, why I'm excited about
and
it.
And just to sour that. And from what they tell me, and hopefully I can get my ass over there before they close at 7 so they can get me a bottle. But they tell me it's a much more balanced beer. They use the malt from the brown ale, which brown ales are quite sweet and malty, to give it a little more balance and to let that impart the fruitiness to the beer instead of having it done with fruit.
Right, the cherries or something.
And this is their 20th birthday beer, and as of this recording, it is out.
And it'll be pretty limited time, most likely, for that. I mean, as long as it lasts, whatever batch they made, or...
Yeah, though I'm not sure how many batches they made, but it's pretty early in the year, so better get it sooner than later.
When you hear this, it's already on sale. Go get some.
Yeah, Uinta's huge around the country right now. Everybody's clamoring for Uinta beers, believe it or not.
Interesting.
And a lot of the shit gets shipped out, so you want to make sure that you snag it.
Get some when you're a local, that's for sure. That's interesting. Do you think they're blowing up just because of the different... twists they've done lately, or the Crooked Line stuff, or
they're blowing up because of word of mouth. I keep my ear to a lot of the beer press, and they get so much good press.
That's awesome.
Everybody loves what they're doing. They're hop notch IPA, it's killing, and wild. Kills, and their Crooked Line, the Labyrinth, and the
I ran into that in Vegas at a place where that was the only U.S. beer were Crooked Line beers of all things, and it was their their premium beer, $20 a bottle style. We're in Vegas on the Strip, right? And it was like,
Coors Light's $20 a can on there.
But we were looking around, going, "Yeah, there's a bunch of kind of lame shit and some foreign beers that were fine, whatever." And then, hey, they got the whole Crooked Line in this place, pretty cool.
Yeah, Uinta's in 20-something states right now.
Wow. And 20 years old, just blowing up. That's awesome. Well, as always, you can check out Mike's beer reviews every month in Slug Magazine, and you'll want to go to his blog at utahbeer.blogspot.com. Mike, thanks so much for coming in and filling us in on the latest.
Thank you.
And we'll have you back for sure to find out what's happening this spring.
Perfect.
Thanks. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week of March 12th to March 18th. Good Lord, it is the middle of March. It's hard to believe. On Tuesday, March 12th, we have the new metal OTEP coming to town on what is reportedly their last tour. Their new album, Hydra, was released in January, and they will be coming through and playing at Club Sound. On Thursday, March 14th, one of my personal favorites, being an old dude who loves that old British beat ska, the English Beater at the Stateroom, a nice tiny little venue for a great band if you like to dance your ass off all night. Oh, at the same time, just down the block at Bird's Tiki Lounge, you have Diseased, longtime thrash death metalers from Virginia. They've been around since 1984. They're headlining at Bird's Tiki Lounge, joined by Gravehill Invaders and Odium Totus. On Friday, March 15th, big night for music in this town. Yonder Mountain String Band is playing at the Depot, bringing that new grass style, lots of flying fingers doing acoustic tunes. Out at the Saltaire, you have Flogging Molly and Mariachi El Bronx. That will be a fabulous show. Flogging Molly, the day before St. Patrick's Day, you can't do much better than that.
that out at the Saltaire. The Stateroom has kind of a weird thing going on. I'm not that much for tribute bands, but these guys I'm kind of curious about. This Must Be the Band is a Talking Heads tribute band. Talking Heads being one of my longtime faves and an amazing live band. I'm curious to see what This Must Be the Band can do. That's at the Stateroom on Friday, March 15th. Also on the 15th, I'm running through the whole weekend. It's the Tumbleweeds Film Festival at the Rose Wagner. Always a great thing, a child film-oriented film festival. And then on Saturday, March 16th, it's the St. Paddy's Day Parade at the Gateway. Always a good excuse to kind of put some booze into some hidden materials and go out and stand around the Gateway and watch people who have got drunk far earlier in the day wander by and party on these floats. It's pretty fun. Later that night, the Young Dubliners making their annual trek here to the Depot, playing along with local Irish-themed guys, Swagger. And the same day, it's the Winter Pop-Up Farmers Market at Pierpont Place. I went to one of these pop-up markets earlier this year. Surprisingly large amount of produce you can get, so it's pretty good if you're into grabbing that good food. Also that night, as mentioned before, King Nico CD release party along with Kathy Foy CD release party, and they'll be joined by Hang Time, Will Sartain's new project that's going forward and doing a lot of great stuff right now. That's at Urban Lounge on the 16th. Also the 16th, Winter Wizardry, the Slug Games up at Snow Basin. And then on Monday, March 18th, the Agrolites, a fine ska rock band out of LA. They are headlining on Urban Lounge. That is your weekly daily calendar. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com and check this calendar every damn day of the week. There's always new stuff going up there. And of course, you can add your own events. That's free. Go to slugmag.com, find the spot, enter your events. If you want to add a little quality content to you, it's a mere $5 a month or $50 a year for the privilege of being on slugmag.com's weekly daily calendar. Once again, that's slugmag.com. We have a brand new experimental rock duo in Salt Lake City called Baby Girl, and that's G-U-R-L if you're keeping track. The band is comprised of Jordan Fairbanks, who's formerly of Eons, and Chris Wadsworth, formerly of Heathen Ass Worship. They just released their debut full-length album called A Name and a Blessing, and this is a song called Tweaker Time, again from Baby Girl.
Okay, sure.
To check out more info on the band, to buy their album, and to find out where they're going to be playing next, search on Facebook. Go to Baby Girl, again, G-U-R-L. I love this idea. The Pirate Punks are a group of volunteer lifer punk rock lovers who create shows, book bands, and host local punk shows all over the country. They've grown beyond the United States, actually. They have chapters in various parts of the world, and they're continuing to grow. Currently, they're branching out into, of all places, South America, who surely loves the rock and roll. Slug writer Alex Cragen spoke with Chris Dreilinger, Frank Carroll, Cody Pirate, and Captain Rock Goo about the Salt Lake City chapter of the Pirate Punks.
And so how did the Salt Lake City chapter come about?
The Salt Lake City chapter, I moved here 3 years ago.
Okay.
From Oakland. I'd been contacted by some people that wanted to start a chapter, and I hung out with them, you know. I don't know if it was ready to happen then, but definitely I could see that I grew up here in Salt Lake, mm-hmm. and then I moved away, and then I came back 3 years ago, and just, you know, I was a pirate in Oakland for, I'm going on 12 years. Hung out for a minute. I didn't know if I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I wanted to get involved, you know, or to bring it. And then Frank contacted me. He'd been in contact with Chief Blackhawk. Frank was putting on shows here, and he contacted me and said, hey, what can we do to get a chapter going here? And I said, I don't know. Let's see if there's anybody interested, you know. So we had some meetings, see who showed up, see who was interested in wanting to pitch in. So far, it's been better than what I expected.
Yeah, and Salt Lake was ready for a group like that. Never Say Never was playing. I mean, you guys were playing what, almost every weekend, trying to build the scene. It was ready for that step.
There's always been like factions and bands of us, like just up in the punks as it was. So, you know, why not organize and make things as awesome as it possibly can be for all of us, and not just our bands, but the whole scene in general. Because we just want, our main purpose is to make the scene just as awesome as it possibly can be for everyone, for rockers anyways.
Yeah.
I care less about like dubstep and juggalos and shit like that. But like, you know, we're just in it for the win. And this is not something that we're making money off of. This is not something that we're doing for any kind of recognition. We're doing it because we love the music, we want it to continue, and we want to be bigger and better than it's ever been before.
Yeah. This scene used to be great. Yeah. You know, it used to be awesome. You know, in the 80s. Yeah. And that's when I grew up here. Right? You know, going to Indian Walk-In Center and Speedway and, you know, Ranch, and, you know,
right.
Forth, all that stuff. It used to be a great scene. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of split up, fractured off, you know, punk rock, metal scene, whatever. It just kind of just broke up, you know. Mm-hmm. It just, I don't know what happened. I wasn't here then. But it can be great once again.
Well, the main problem was when the scene was strong in those times, we had like Speedway Cafe and then Lo-Fi Cafe, and those places were pretty much our epicenters.
Right.
And we put all our eggs in one basket there. And once the venue was lost, the whole scene was lost.
Right. Yeah.
With us, we have all kinds of venues that are willing to work with us, and now we have a faction that we can go from wherever we want to. And if we lose a venue, it's not going to be the end of the scene anymore, because we're the ones who carry it on.
Yeah, we work independent. We work through in different venues,
right.
And we can be mobile. We can have a show here, have a show here, have a show here, do all ages show, do a bar show, you know, try to mix it up. And I think that's good. You know, we found some great people to work with, and so they believe in what we're doing, and you know, we just keep it going.
Is there a philosophical aspect to the pirate punk movement?
Absolutely.
Up the punks, fuck the world.
It's a social revolution, man. You know, some people want to camp out in tents in a park. Mm-hmm. That's cool. We're going to do it through music. We're going to do a social evolution. Every show we put on is a revolution. Mm-hmm. Every show we put on is a fuck you to the system, you know? And we're doing it this way because this seems to work so far. If there needs to be social revolution, we'll find out. You know, but there's a group of individuals that want this. If they didn't, it wouldn't work.
Right. And you know, punk rock has always been, has never been afraid to shy away from standing up and being counted. You know, you can look at the Occupy movements and everything like that, but where the hippies failed was they stopped. Punk rock has continued to go on, grassroots movements. Punk rock really taught the world to question. And that's been since that bike messenger was stopped for wearing the Mises a Pig shirt. I forget where he was going into, but it was in Washington, D.C. Jeff Nelson made the Mises a Pig shirts and t-shirts and posters and stuff. He was a drummer for Minor Threat at the time. And really, punk rock has just become this thing that people may not recognize it, but a lot of the ideals that people have now is because people from punk, you know, a lot of the punk rock world stood up and said, well, why? Why are we marching merrily to our deaths?
The system's become too apathetic. Mm-hmm. You know, you have narcissism that breeds people who are non-accountability, and non-accountability breeds apathy. Mm-hmm. And this is where we want to change things. Stop being apathetic. Make the world what you want it. We want to have great shows. We want to have a good time. People go to church on Sunday. We go to shows on a Friday night. That's our church.
What you want, brother.
You know, that's my church right there. When a band's playing at 1,000 watts, you know, cranking it out, there's a pit going on, the kids are having a great time, everybody's getting along for the most part. That's my church, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to go and say your hallelujahs and praise Jesus and stuff like that.
But it's also just like been more of a social awakening. You know, each one of us as individuals has come to terms with ourselves that the world is the way it is being run, and all the problems that we now face as a human race is wrong. And you know, we're the ones who stand up in defiance to that, and standing up for what is right. And you know, we don't necessarily preach anything, but we promote ideas of tolerance, equality, and we won't shy away from the fight. You know, we'll brave the battles and proudly wear the scars in doing so. So
you don't have to join in, but don't count us out. Don't shut us out. We're in the society. You know, people of alternative views are here. You know, and here in Salt Lake City, there's a popular view that's backed by a religious dogma, and we're not necessarily into that. We want to live our lives. You know, I'm never going to protest somebody if we want to go to church. You know, unless they're like eating children or some shit like that. You know, right?
Babies.
But don't fucking stop me from putting on a rock and roll show.
Right.
Yeah, we just honestly, I'd say it would be a good way to put it is we enforce liberty. We won't let anyone boss anyone around, especially not ourselves.
Yeah, the freest I've ever felt is at a show, either playing or going to. Right. That's the freest there. You know, right at that moment, the band can be horrible. But if the crowd is into it, it's awesome. You know, as long as the band's not spreading messages of hate, mm-hmm. you know, we're not in that. We're non-homophobic, we're non-xenophobic, you know, we're not racist, mm-hmm. none of that. You know, it's inclusion.
If a local band wants to collaborate or start get a show started with you guys, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, we have a Facebook. We're not hiding. You know, if you see us on the street, we're in a patch, or you see our logo or anything, or, I mean, we're usually frequent in a heavy metal shop, Ronch Records. We're not hiding. Yeah. It's pretty easy to find us.
Several bars around town.
Yeah.
If you see a green or silver patch, you come up to them, you know? And
we can't do everything. I mean, there is so much out there, you know, but we can't do everything.
We do have to be somewhat selective.
Yeah. And our goal is not to oversaturate the scene, too. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be smart about who we promote, who we have, and so we have to be somewhat selective. That's it with everything. I'd like to have every band play. I want everybody to get a shot. Mm-hmm. There was once upon a time where nobody would give me a shot. Why not give that band that nobody else will book an opportunity to play a local show? Maybe it's a bigger act, maybe it's not. Maybe it's a bunch of local bands. Who cares? You know, at least they get their chops, cut their teeth.
Yeah. And there's a few bands you'll see on almost every pirate show, because we like to put what we call pirate bands on there. You're the Wolf is a pirate band. Drunk as Shit is a pirate band. those are two bands that you're going to see us playing a lot with because they put in the work with us. But otherwise, I mean, we've got Dead Virgins, never played a show with us. They're on the Generator show. Decibel Trust is playing with Kevin Seconds, Jesus Regino. You know, we crush all genres. There's one hard and fast rule, though, that we absolutely will not ever abide by, and that's any kind of hate speech, any kind of racist. Take that crap.
If you want to listen to that, turn on the news.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
exactly.
It's exactly.
If I hear any bands spouting that kind of stuff,
pull the plug right there.
Yeah. I think I won't be the first one on stage to pull the mic, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're just not going to tolerate it. You know, it's.
You want to play that, you can go play it in the middle of the tracks.
You know,
You can be obscene or rowdy. I mean, we all love that. But if you're going to be some bigot or some kind of arrogant ass and, you know, just preaching some kind of elitism or any kind of hate message, I mean, punk rock's always been in defiance against that, and it hasn't changed, and it won't, you know, because then we would be no better than the people that we hate, and that's just,
and what we're against.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're not going to perpetuate punk rock, that. We're not going to allow it to happen.
Punk rock is a movement of inclusion, not exclusion. You know, everybody is welcome. You know, it's
not everybody.
Yeah. Juggalos aren't really welcome.
Generally, there are kids here that really want to put in. They just don't know how.
Yeah.
They really want to participate. They don't know how. Well, guess what? We'll show you how. Here because you know, as long as they're willing to do the same for the next generation, mm-hmm. You know,
just keep it going.
Keep it going.
Keep it alive. Never let it die.
Pay forward type thing.
Yeah. You know, when we see kids, we have kids. We have people bring their kids to shows. You know what? We've got earplugs for those kids. Yeah, and we want to have a safe environment for those kids, you know, the holiday show, for those kids to be able to show up, their parents to have a good time. Maybe they can't find a babysitter, or maybe they want to introduce their kids to this type of environment, you know, whatever it is. But we got to make it safe for those kids, too. That's the future.
Well, the Coffin Cats, we had kids in strollers.
Yeah.
We had kids running around. It was great.
Yeah. It was great, you know, and I love that. I like being able to see that generation, this next generation. What they do with it, that's on them, but at least...
There's hope out there.
Yeah.
The next generation.
Yeah. You know, their parents feel safe enough that they can bring their kids to a show. Yeah, it's in a coffee shop. Okay, we'll do it anywhere. We'll put on a show anywhere we can, anywhere that'll have us, anywhere we can afford. And that's what it's about, you know. And this town has a habit of getting the police call on them. Well, okay, call the police. All right, we'll do it at a legal venue.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we do.
Yeah, which I do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always great to have a house show, a warehouse show, if we can, you know.
DIY or die, but the fact of the matter is that we're not necessarily preaching, but we are spreading subversive ideas and ideologies, and they do contradict the way that, I guess, the powers that be really want things to go, and they're tightening the noose, and whether you realize it or not, people need to wake up before it's too late. When punk rock started initially, I mean, it just spread around the world like a wildfire, like a plague almost. Well, they were viewed as a plague, but, you know, it was just something pure and honest. Mm-hmm. And people are sick of being lied to. You ask anyone on the street, you know, they're sick of being lied to. And they're just fed lies, and everything that you see is just to perpetuate fear, to make you feel like you need their guidance and to be safe under their wing. You know, for a sense of security, but that's not the case. People are more than capable of taking care of their own. And the world isn't as a big scary place as everyone, as the media especially, wants you to think it is. We're just against that. I mean,
we're keeping the mass population docile. Mm-hmm. You know,
violent pacification.
Easier to control that way when everybody's just sitting at home watching the evening news, watching who's gonna be the next idol. You know, of America, you know.
Who just got shot,
you know.
Yeah, and all that's just a big, fat distraction. The whole world is in turmoil.
Yeah, life is happening outside of your house.
Wait, what?
Yeah, right? Yeah. And you know what? We're not saying that we're the only way. We're just saying that we're a way. Mm-hmm. We don't want everybody to follow our plan. We just want everybody to be themselves. Exactly. And not be, you know, and not to be afraid of the powers that be. Mm-hmm. You know, not to be afraid to put on punk rock shows, not to be afraid, if you're an artist of any kind, not to be afraid to express yourself, as long as you're within reason.
Not to be afraid to be
minors
who you really are.
Excluded.
Be who you are, be proud of who you are. Well,
The next show the Pirate Punks are bringing in is Kevin Seconds at Cafe Neo Coffee on March 14th, along with Problem Daughter, Reagan Ashton, Jesus or Genome, and Decibel Trust. The cover is just $7, and the show starts at 6:30 p.m. To find out more about our local Pirate Punks chapter, visit them online at facebook.com/slc.piratepunks, and that's P-Y-R-A-T-E, and that's punks with an X. As always, thank you very much for listening to the Sound Waves from the Underground podcast. For all things Slug Magazine, please come visit us at slugmag.com. Our Slug crew is about to head to South by Southwest once again this year, and we'd like to hear your thoughts on the festival. Are you going? Who would you like to see? Why isn't Dan going? And what's your take on the experience? You can either email the Soundwaves at slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're going to have some awesome content recorded live right down in Austin, Texas, where all of the people will be, again, except me, Dan Nalen. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and Dan Nalen, that's me. Executive producer, Angela Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Next week, you'll want to join us when we'll hear from the Poor York Studios artists. We'll also talk to Shanghai Kate, one of the awesome tattoo artists coming to the Salt Lake City Tattoo Convention, and we'll talk about the Screwtape Letters, a little play production based on the work of C.S. Lewis. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next week.